Okay, our final speaker is Kevin Duvetter, and he's going to be talking about modifying yield goal based NNP recommendations to varying input and output prices.
Thanks, Mike. At the risk of trying to act like I know something about fertilizer, I am an ag economist, where I think everyone I followed prior to me is much more into the discipline of soil science and fertilizer. But the reason that myself and Terry Kasten's one of the co-authors on here, Dorvar is obviously an agronomist, but the reason we did this is because we were getting a lot of the questions as economists. You know, what's going on with prices? How should we impact that? So what we did is we looked to what K-State recommends. So I'm going to specifically talk about what K-State does and what we did in response to that to deal with the prices. I think we all know what the situation is, you know, prices have been a little crazy, a lot of volatility, unprecedented levels. I also bring in irrigation pumping costs because in western Kansas we have a lot of irrigation, and I want to talk about how we address that simultaneously, or actually it was after we talked about fertilizer, another issue came up, and I want to talk about that. And then another thing is as prices started going up and then actually came back down, we know that not all nutrients and all products move together. So we started getting questions even last year about, you know, what's your thoughts on optimal rates of liquid versus dry? And you know, so because people said we have different prices we're focusing on depending on what the product is. So we got a lot of those questions, and the point was is we didn't really have good ways of answering them. To know what's going on. I mean, we all know this, but I show this graph for one real main reason is we all know prices went crazy here recently. But prior to 2005 or so, prices have been very stable as a general rule for nitrogen. Same for P and K. So what I'm going to talk about in a little bit is I'm going to say here's the K-State fertilizer recommendations that would come out of our agronomy department, and they don't include prices. And an argument might be made that made a lot of sense, that there really was no reason to worry about including prices in their recommendations because prior to the last few, 3-4 years, prices really weren't that volatile. I also show this graph. It's a graph of diesel and natural gas because depending on what irrigation energy source you're using, and those came into play, and specifically focus on 2005, you can see that natural gas really peaked then. And so we had some irrigators having some inputs going way up prior to some of the big run-ups in P and K. And I'll come back to that in a little bit. And then we all know what is going on with commodity prices, and that offset, in some cases, all the impact of the rising fertilizer prices if commodity prices went up enough. But I do think going forward, we'll continue to see some of this volatility. So hopefully we can address some of this. That's just some price ratios, and the bottom line is they're changing. Okay, we don't need to dwell on that. Well, and once again, keep in mind, I'm specifically focusing on mostly what we do in Kansas, but the fertilizer recommendations for a specific nutrient, nitrogen, do not account for the prices of that nutrient. So if you look at the K-State recommendations, and I'll show you just a very simplified example in a minute, when we recommend how many pounds of N to apply, we don't ask what the price of N is. We don't ask what the price of wheat is or corn is, so therefore there's no way of talking about how price is impacted. Furthermore, and this gets back, you know, I actually wish I would have followed right behind Scott, because so much of this is the things he set the stage for, is we don't have those interactions in there. So when somebody asks for what's the price of N, how does that affect my optimal N rate, we should also be saying what does that mean for my phosphorus recommendations. And we don't ever ask that question, or at least we don't at Kansas State. Now we do know that a lot of our agronomists and fertilizer specialists have a very good subjective understanding of the issues, and therefore when someone says, well, what should I do, there's a good gut feel that I know that we probably should cut back. The problem is that's not a very quantified number. You know, price of phosphorus is $1 a pound, yeah, we probably should cut back, but how much? 10%, 20%, 100%? Should we just not apply phosphorus? And that's what we wanted to get at, is we wanted to get at something that we could quantify, not just identify the direction, but actually quantify the magnitude, recognizing that there's error around that. We recognize there's always going to be error around recommendations. So what we did, and at the very bottom of the slide, it says initially, and this is back in late 2005, Terry Kasten, myself, Alan Schlegel, and Troy Dumbler, we were focusing specifically on nitrogen. You know, the high phosphorus and potash prices weren't even on the radar screen really at that point that bad. So we started focusing on that. And what we said, though, is, you know, there's been a lot of research, a lot of collective wisdom and knowledge going into developing fertilizer recommendations at K-State. They don't include prices. But their recommendations, which are in this publication, MF2586, and I'll show you just a simple example in a minute, they're based on a lot of research and a lot of history. And we said, we don't want to just throw that out and say that's not useful. So we said, we want to build on that. We want to take that as our starting point and build on it. So what we did is we made some critical assumptions. Okay, we made an assumption that we said, one is, even though the K-State recommendations never explicitly mention prices, we are going to assume that when they make those recommendations, they actually think about prices. And we're going to use long-run prices. Now, that might be a huge assumption, but we know that at some point, prices matter. So we use long-run prices. So as an example, 10 years prior to the publication coming out, the average wheat price was $3.22, corn was $2.35. Nitrogen, kind of an average of UAN, urea, and anhydrous ammonia, was about 21 cents a pound, and P was about 25 cents. So we made that a big assumption. We also said that the recommended rates for one nutrient assume that other management factors are non-limiting. In other words, we don't ask about soil test phosphorus when we make a nitrogen recommendation. We assume that that's not an issue. And this is another huge faith, or huge assumption, and we know it's incorrect, but we're essentially assuming that these yields respond independently. So the interaction term that Scott said is needed, I agree with. But we said we don't today have that in our recommendations, so we assume that it's not needed. But we know that going forward, that needs to be something accounted for. And then initially we were responding on nitrogen, but I'll just point this out up front. When I show you some stuff on P response later, we're going to say that it could be represented using a quadratic plateau. Now, we tested that on nitrogen, and it made sense. Now, we're not sure that that's right on P, but that was an assumption we made. Okay, so we're back in 2005, basically, and we're focusing on nitrogen. If you look at K-State's nitrogen recommendations, and this is that publication I've mentioned a few times, basically it's yield goal driven. It's yield goal driven, and it says, you tell me what your yield goal is, for example, on wheat, and we'll take that yield goal times 2.4, then we'll make adjustments for organic matter and profile N and all the other adjustments. But what it boils down to is that yield goal times 2.4 assumes a linear relationship between nitrogen and yields, okay? Basically, it says every additional pound of N I put on, I get 0.42 bushels per acre. Whether it's a linear relationship or not, that's debated. And if you go out and look at the literature, you'll see lots of nonlinear relationships, and you'll see linear. A lot of times it is believed that if we have kind of a limiting factor framework, that it might be a linear relationship. So a linear plateau is the right response function, or response curve, if you want. Now, the problem as an economist is we don't like that, because if the true relationship in the world is linear plateau, it says prices really don't matter. It says you either put on no nitrogen or you put on the amount to get maximum, and typically it's always going to be the maximum, and therefore prices don't matter. But, as I'll show you in a minute, it still might be nonlinear, and that still might be consistent with a linear plateau. But here's the, you know, thinking, if it truly is this linear plateau relationship, and if we have absolutely zero nitrogen in the system, so on my x-axis I've got total usable nitrogen, which is fertilizer, soil test nitrogen, organic matter, everything. If I've got zero, it says you get zero yield, and then you've got a slope, which basically says for every 1 pound of nitrogen, so I'm assuming that all nitrogen substitute one for one, it says I get 0.42 bushels for each pound, and then basically it says, so long as nitrogen, if wheat is at 320, so long as nitrogen's less than $1.34 a pound, you're going to go right to the plateau part. Once nitrogen's above $1.34, you go zero. So once again, I said, the fact that we don't factor prices into our recommendations maybe doesn't matter, because $1.34 is pretty expensive then. Well, this is some data from North Central Kansas, 1996 to 2002. It's grain sorghum. And it's a fertilizer study looking at rates. And you can see I've got the squares or the different data points. That's actual data from the study. And then I went in and statistically, I mean, it looks like I did it with a ruler, but I actually did it statistically. I said, put the best fitting line, it's a linear plateau on there. And it's, like I said, it's kind of hard to argue that linear plateau doesn't characterize yields extremely well. I said, you don't even need statistics. You just fit those dots with a ruler. You know, that's how well it fits the data. The problem is, as we can see there, is you get one year where I had very little response, another year where it kept going up a lot longer. And so the point is in a producer's world, when they have to make a decision for 2003, which isn't on that graph, what's the right number? Well, what we would typically do is we'd say, it's probably the average of what we've observed in the past. So this purple or darker colored line, that's not a curved line, that's not a mathematical function, it's a series of linear segments. It's the average of all the other lines. So it's a bunch of linear segments real close together. So there's no mathematical function behind it, but you can start looking at that series of linear lines and you can start seeing that it's starting to look like it could be nonlinear. But it was generated from a lot of linear plateaus, okay? So that was north central Kansas. This was some data down out in western Kansas by Alan Schlegel. The red lines would represent site years. We don't have the actual points on there, but those are the best fit linear plateaus by year. You can see, similar to the data that I think Peter showed, is some years you get no response, other years you get a very good response. You know, one year we had a flat line, another year this thing kept going up the whole time. The blue line, once again, is the average of all the red lines, so it's the average of a bunch of linear, so it's a lot of linear short segments. So once again, no mathematical function behind that. Well, we did that for 16 different studies, north central Kansas and western Kansas, wheat, sorghum, I think it's all wheat and sorghum. And we said what our goal is to try to estimate a mathematical function that fits that blue line best on the previous slide. In other words, that series of linear segments, what fits that best? And we considered a linear plateau and in four different nonlinear ones. And what we found over half the time, not always, but over half the time, the quadratic plateau fit it best. So that gave us some confidence that quadratic plateau makes sense. And we like that because it's fairly nice mathematically. Well, graphically, the other nonlinear ones looked very similar. They did end up with some different results in terms of what was economic optimal. But we went ahead with quadratic plateau because more than half the time, for sure, it was the optimal functional form. And like I said, what's nice about it is now prices matter, which we believe they do. It's consistent with the linear plateau in any given year. So when people say linear plateau is the correct relationship between fertilizer and yields in any given year, it might be. But in a producer's world, they're working under expectations about the future or this particular year. So what we did then is we estimated model parameters based on several points. And this is where what we're doing is very, very similar to what Scott showed, just slightly different. But we said we've got 3 points. I think yours was estimated with 2 points. And we said, well, the first point is no nitrogen in the system, no yield. I mean, we're not talking fertilizer. We're talking about no nitrogen, no organic matter, nothing. So it would seem like it would be zero yield. Then we said, we're going to plateau at whatever my expected yield is, my target yield, my yield goal. Now, if you look back at those studies from north central Kansas and western Kansas, remember, the plateau does not mean yields can't go higher than that. When you talk to producers, sometimes they say, well, my expected yield, you know, that's where it's plateauing. That just says that's on average where we expect yields will maximize when nitrogen's not limiting. Doesn't mean yields can't be higher in any given year. And then the third one we made is we said, what K-State recommends is optimal. And it's optimal consistent with long run prices. That 320 corn, 322 wheat, excuse me, and 21 cent pound nitrogen. So that gave us 3 points, and with 3 points, we can define the mathematical equation behind the curve, okay? So it's actually very similar to what Scott showed, just slightly different as to how we came up with the equation, but basically it's a very similar approach. And now prices matter. Now we can have different yield goals for wheat, but notice instead of being linear plateau, it's nonlinear, and we can say our recommendations on here would be what K-State would officially recommend, but if we change prices, now all of a sudden we have different recommended rates. So what we did is we took the official K-State recommendations, added this price component, and we now have something that works. Well, we put that into a spreadsheet, and we kind of said we've got something that works great. If you believe K-State's recommendations, now that price of nitrogen is high, you have to believe our results. And kind of thought this will help. We can tell people how to change inputs and recommendations, and whatnot. And then we talked to an irrigated farmer, and they said, yeah, but, you know, I'm not just focused or faced with high nitrogen prices. I'm spending a lot of money on water. And every time I get one more bushel of corn, I got to spend money on more nitrogen and more water. How do you account for that? Well, we said we don't. And K-State recommendations don't. So we went back to the drawing board, and we built in a production function for water and for western Kansas. So we had a nitrogen production function, a response curve, and we had a water response curve. And then we said, okay, now we've solved some problems, and we've built that into the tool, and we can do that. And then 2008 comes along, and people said, yeah, well, now phosphorus is over $1 a pound. Doesn't that come into play? That one bushel of corn I get to sell once, I've got high nitrogen, I've got high water, and I've got high P costs. How do you account for that? So we went back to the drawing board, and we basically came up with a response curve for P independently of N, as opposed to interactively with N. And that's a big difference, but I think it's still very relevant. So here's what we've got. We've got three curves. They all three max out at whatever you put in as a user as your yield goal. So if I said I have a yield goal of 225 bushel on irrigated corn, I've got a nitrogen response curve, I've got a phosphorus response curve, and I've got an irrigation response curve. All three are independent of each other, which we know is not quite right, but we know from the K-State recommendations there is no linkage. Okay, so that's what we have. We built that into a spreadsheet. Now the downside is this is not a real nice algorithm. There's three different production functions that are all independent of each other. So it's more of a solving or looking up routine to find the optimals. But just to real quick show you what's going on, just to hopefully, you know, the blue numbers in this spreadsheet are what a user would enter. So they're going to enter things like their yield goal. They're going to enter in soil test P, they're going to in organic matter, soil test N, other N adjustments. The same information that goes into our soil test recommendations. But they're also going to enter in prices. If they put in long run prices, $3.22 on wheat, 20 cents on nitrogen, and zero on phosphorus, and zero on water, the model will give back the exact same results as the official K-State recommendations that would come out of the agronomy department. So our economic model gives back their results under one condition only. Same long-run prices and assuming phosphorus is zero when looking at nitrogen. When I look at phosphorus and I zero out nitrogen, I basically get the same, you know, subject to a little bit of rounding error because I don't have my decimal places going out far enough on prices. But the point is our economic model gives back the same results as the K-State official recommendations at that long-run prices. Now, here's at more current prices today. So if today I plugged in nitrogen at 36 cents a pound and I said, but phosphate's not free, it's 42 cents a pound, water's $4, and then I put in some current prices for 2010, just look at the numbers on the economic optimal end, our model would say you should be about 11% lower than what K-State would say, 12% on corn, so 11 on wheat, 12 on corn, and then phosphorus should also be lower. It doesn't go to zero, but it is lower for sure. And so what's going on graphically is we've got three curves. All of them have their own economic optimal points independently, but that's not the right number. The right number is we have to think about them all simultaneously, and this pink line is where I maximize returns. And if you think about what we're doing is we basically are starting down at the bottom and we just start raising up and saying, at what point will I get at what yield, subtracting the cost of all three inputs, will I maximize returns? And that's what happened. And you can see that the red dot versus the orange dot says I cut back much more on phosphorus than I do on water or nitrogen, but you'll notice that all three of those dots are to the left of the other three, which says when I factor in the price of all inputs simultaneously, kind of allowing for that interaction, although we didn't model it interactively, I cut back on all of them a little bit at the same time. So just one last way to show it. This is the exact same screen I showed you a minute ago. And remember I said, I believe this number right here was 11% and this one was 12. The only thing I changed was the price of phosphorus or phosphate. And my nitrogen numbers went down. And see, right, so what I'm saying is, what we need to think about is when the price of phosphorus goes up, maybe our fertilizer recommendations for nitrogen should go down as well. And currently our system doesn't allow that. We need a model like what Scott showed, or something like this, which is probably a second best. Ideally, we would have the other model. But this accounts for all of them simultaneously. And the first time I showed this to producers, their question was what about K? It's like, obviously, K would come in the same way. In most all of Kansas, we focus on N and P, but not we do have some areas. So adding in K, one more dimension to it, would even increase it that much more. Every bushel of wheat, every bushel of corn has inputs for all of them. And when we think of them as independent, we're ignoring that. So just to kind of wrap it up, what we've done is if we want to get at this price relationship, we need this mathematical equation, this response function. We have to have something along those lines, or else we just can't do it. We backed one out. We backed one out from the existing data. So rather than going out and collecting a bunch of trial data, we said, well, whatever K-State currently recommends is based on a lot of research, a lot of history. We don't want to just throw that away. That's based on a lot of wisdom. But we're going to use that and back out this response curve. We think the quadratic plateau, especially for nitrogen, makes a lot of sense. It is consistent with a linear plateau in a given year. So those people say it's a linear relationship. We say yes, but in an expectation framework, it might very well be nonlinear. And then the last one is the point, and like I said, I think this gets back to what Scott was talking about, is we really need to think about all these things at the same time. We don't think about just nitrogen ignoring phosphorus. We don't just think about phosphorus ignoring potash and whatnot. And we've attempted to do that with at least three inputs, water, N, and P. So with that, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Do you mind staying up here for a minute?
Yeah. Okay, the question's getting at kind of short run versus long run. In what a lot of people did is pea prices went up, as they said, I'm going to skip a year and kind of rely on what's in the soil. And I had written that note down to myself, and because Scott had it mentioned on his slide, this whole approach we've taken is a short run approach. We are using all of our phosphorus modeling came out of K-State's sufficiency recommendations. So yes, there is some long-run implications of this. If you follow our model recommendations, those numbers that came out of the spreadsheet, you will actually draw down soil test phosphorus levels. So obviously that's not sustainable long-term. You can't do that every year. But the model says, but I'm not arguing that that's wrong. When we had an 80 cent to a dollar a pound phosphorus, maybe the optimal thing was to draw down, at least in the short run. But yes, that has to be factored into. It's not in our model because it gets much, much more complicated when you bring in that time dimension. Yeah. Okay, well, this graphic right here, you can see we've got three production functions all independent of each other. And on the x-axis, all I have is 0 to 100% of max. So on my far right, I have 100% of what I need to get peak yield. And then on the far left, obviously, I've got no inputs applied. And so my green and red lines would actually, yeah, let's see, I'm sitting here trying to think why they don't come back to zero. Oh, because this accounts for soil test phosphorus. Now, what we're doing is, and it's not quite this way, but let's just say I drew a line at 120 bushels. So at 120 bushels, you come down from the red and you'd say, well, we would put on about 5% of what we need for phosphorus to get at maximum yields. We would put on about 20% of nitrogen, about 20% of water. And at that level of 120 bushels, minus those three costs, there would be some level of net return, right? And then I just ratcheted it up to 160, And I say, is that a bigger number or a smaller number? And I ratchet it up, and it turns out that it's at 218 bushels, that's where I get the maximum return. So what would I put on? Where all three of those intersect, you'd come down, and phosphorus would be about 70% of what you would need to get on maximum yields. And that's all coming out of our, you know, piece efficiency recommendations, which what we had to do was take the K-State recommendations and convert it into a quadratic plateau mathematical equation. And I show you all the math for that. But that's what we did, basically similar to what Scott was talking about, is build the equation. I don't know how well that answered, but anything else? Okay, thanks.